You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Literary Treks. My name is Jonathan Cohn, and as always, I'm joined now by Casey Pettit. Casey, great to talk to you again.
Yes, it's great to be back for another recording. Another, well, not books this time, but another...
Comics.
Yes, another literary Star Trek adventure.
Mm-hmm. Or many, many small adventures, as the case is this time.
Vignettes.
So, well, before we talk about those vignettes, why don't we tell you how you can contact us? We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place is to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group on Facebook. Just type in Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Literary Treks. That will find its way to us. You can also find the network on X and Instagram at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there and you can see the books and we've read and what's coming up. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you, you can visit our Patreon page and become a patron. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. You can even become an associate producer of your favorite show, just like Casey Pettit here and Greg Rozier are for Literary Treks. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Lastly, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcasts. It's great for us and also helps others find the show. So, Casey, we have one news item that's out that is interesting to us because it's a new book. It is not a novel, but it is a behind-the-scenes book. Would you care to let everyone know what that is?
I would love to, and it is by our friends John and Maria Jose Tenuto, who listeners may recall wrote a book, a coffee table book about Star Trek II. And they've also then wrote a book about the making of Star Trek III, which we still need to get them on the show to talk about because we have copies in our little hands and we need to talk to them about it because these are gorgeous books.
Yes, well, they are.
Yes, well, and without further ado, the newest book in their line, if you can imagine, is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, The Making of the Classic Film. And that's going to come out from Titan Books in September of 2026. So just in time for Christmas. So like I said, we got to get them on the show to talk about Star Trek III and kind of talk a little bit maybe about this book. And then once it's out, hopefully we'll be able to get them back again to talk to them about Star Trek IV, and who knows, maybe there's more in their future. I would love that.
Well, it'd be great if there's more in their future, but it would also be really funny if it ends with four, because they would just be doing the unofficial trilogy,
right.
Which it's not officially a trilogy, but this would like cement it for us, be like, all right, it's they even trilogy. Only produced the three. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and I think Titan Books has I think it was like the art and effects of Star Trek, the motion picture. So, you know,
So
I kind of have this feeling like maybe they do. I don't know. Like Star Trek 5 is so divisive, but Star Trek 6 would be really cool if they did a book on that one.
But see, they really can't justify skipping over one. Right. So it's probably we have to do 5 so we can get to 6.
Exactly. Well, and yeah, so let's everybody go out and buy this one so we can then get 5 going so then we can get 6. Well, yeah. And I'll just read what here is on the Penguin Random House website about this book. An in-depth look at the making of Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, featuring new and exclusive interviews and rarely seen production art and behind-the-scenes images. Go behind the scenes of one of the most beloved entries in the Star Trek saga with Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, the making of the classic film. This definitive companion takes fans deep into the heart of the 1986 production that brought humor, heart, and humpback whales to the final frontier. Packed with exclusive interviews, rare photographs, and untold stories from the cast and crew, this book reveals how director Leonard Nimoy and the creative team crafted a legendary time travel adventure. From the challenges of shooting on location in San Francisco, to groundbreaking special effects needed to create the animatronic whales, to the environmental message that still resonates today, this insider account celebrates the risks and rewards of boldly going in a new direction. Whether you're a lifelong Trek fan or a film history enthusiast, discover the artistry and camaraderie behind a film that helped redefine what a Star Trek movie could be. Well, we have got a whole lot of comics that we have not been good about keeping up on. And we're going to remedy that today with, I don't know, you said beforehand there was like 30
issues. I think I counted it was like 27.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, may as well round it up. But yeah, IDW has been busy and we have been lax. I don't know. Like we've just been... I don't think it's been any secret that you and I are not huge comic book readers.
Mm-hmm.
I'll read the occasional graphic novel, but...
Right.
Yeah. So we'll start off here with one of the ongoing series that IDW is putting out, and that's Lower Decks. And we've actually already talked about the first 8 issues on previous episodes of Literary Treks and kind of where we're at today as we're recording this. We've got issues 9 through 16. I will say that with these 8 issues here, I like them better than the first 8, and then even better than the first kind of round of Lower Decks that they've done. I noticed in these ones they didn't have like all the little kind of sub or jokes at the bottom of every page, which was actually kind of nice because then they read more like regular comic books without having to throw little jokes in just because, you know, whatever. Like it was. It was just kind of nice. I kept finding myself flipping back to find, oh, did I miss one of those? Because like on some of them, they've been on like every page. These ones, I'd say too, the stories were a little bit better, and maybe that's just because they were a little bit shorter. Like the first set was like a 2-issue arc, and it was just about Tendi and her debt to the to this Ferengi because he basically paid for her to get into Starfleet Academy, even though we all know and Tendi now knows that it didn't actually cost anything, but she's got this huge debt. But it was a fun story. It was still very Lower Decks, but it actually did have some good kind of Trek stuff in it. So I thought that was fun. And like, again, the artwork on all these Lower Decks ones are pretty much identical to each other, like to the show and everything. So it makes it nice to be able to get through them.
And I think that one of the things that helps the Lower Deck comics is that because the show was already animated in this kind of style, it makes the translation to readability easier.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the other comics that we'll talk about, particularly the Last Starship one, the art style is so different that from like the medium that the characters we are normally used to, that it makes it harder to understand what's happening. And I've always felt that the Lower Decks ones, you know exactly what's happening on those pages because it feels like it's just straight out of the TV show.
Yeah, and the show's already kind of wacky enough anyways. Mm-hmm. It kind of does some comic book type stuff in the show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. One of the other ones, like another kind of like two-issue arc that they did was actually, I guess what I called, and ironically enough with the news item that we had earlier, it was kind of their treatment of Star Trek IV. They just took a humorous spin on having to repopulate Earth again with humpback whales because George and Gracie were, you know, humpback whales were already extinct in Kirk's time. So they brought George and Gracie back to repopulate the species. Gracie was pregnant. She had her calf and then didn't have any more kids. That's kind of where like Lower Deck says like, hey, she didn't have any more kids. And like, how are they going to repopulate the species? And like, he's not going to, the son is not going to be with mother or whatever. So it was a pretty funny take on that because it was kind of like, oh yeah, they that wouldn't really work.
There's a reason that in books where they talk about like repopulation, they don't just take a single male and female of a population to repopulate. They go and get like dozens and dozens of them to be safe.
Yeah,
you know, that's the ironic thing about, you know, Star Trek IV. Now, to be honest, with the whole premise of Star Trek IV, it's not about necessarily the repopulation of the whales necessarily. It's more about just getting them there to that point in time to stop the probe from them. So it's like as soon as the probe's gone, it's like, all right, we don't care what happened to you guys.
Right. And in the comic, they kind of call back to that and they say, well, the probe may come back again someday. Right. So,
so we have to keep them, I guess. Yes.
Well, it's funny, too. You know, I just thought about this, you know, even in the Bible, in the Noah's Ark story, everybody's talking
they
about
are,
like
two. Yeah.
Well, it's two. We focus on one of each, but I'm pretty sure if you really read that story in detail, it's more like they take seven pairs, or it's more than just one male and one female of every species. I'm pretty sure there was it talks about more, or else I read a really weird version of the Bible. I don't know, but so yeah. So anyways, these Lower Decks ones, and actually issues 13 through 16 are actually the first four parts of another story about Norman, the android from the original series, shows up, and there's some funny shenanigans that go on with that, but we'll kind of leave Lower Decks there. They'll continue that one, and we'll see where that one goes eventually.
Well, we also read, speaking of the word red, we also read the Red Shirts one, which I have to say was quite brutal. Yeah. Like, when I started it, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I knew that there was, of course, on the cover of each one is like a skeleton of each like dead crew member. And when you look at them in that image, you're like, all right, so there might be some dark humor here, which I'm all up for. But then like when you start reading it, there's like one page where they're describing the away mission, and every panel has a different dead crew member. Yeah. And it's like some horrific way that they died, and it's like our main character being like, he's the only one that survived. And I was like, dang, this is quite violent for the comics. I mean, yes, we've had like them blow up stuff and right, you know, blow up universes before. But I mean, this one, we're seeing like people like get like eyeballs like cut out and get stabbed multiple times. It's there's quite a lot happening in this one.
Yeah, this is graphic. Very graphic.
When we said we were reading graphic novels, that's not what we meant.
This is not what we meant. Yeah, it's especially for Star Trek. I mean, dang, like they really kind of pushed the envelope on these ones.
And it also like got so super like, you know, introspective when our main character, and I'm blanking on his name, but when he's a red shirt, doesn't matter. But
he had a when name.
he's the only one that survives his original crew, mm-hmm. and then he's sent on this mission to try to trap someone who's been spying on the Federation, and then he's the. Little spoilers. He's the only one that survives of that crew, and then he's picked up by the Enterprise, and he has this like comments that he's like, "Well, I guess I'm like I'll never be able to like have these friends because he knows they'll all just continue to be red shirts." And you're like, "Man, this is you're getting kind of morbid with your your themes here."
Yeah. Well, and one of the I can't remember any of their names. There's like we read a lot of comics this week.
We did,
but there was the oldest living red shirt. Was he the one that was like on a planet as like kind of not undercover necessarily, but just kind of getting ready for this mission or whatever? And
you mean Cromarty?
Yeah. And it was, I don't know, it was comical in some ways just with, because anytime anybody died, it shouldn't have been surprising, but sometimes it was. And then, yeah, like you said, there was one page where it was just like every panel was somebody else dying. And it was almost Lower Decks in nature where it was just like, okay, we're going a little overboard with the red shirt trope. But that's the whole point of this little series.
Yeah. And it was a nice little contained series that just the five. But I actually did like this one. It was it was all right.
It was different. Yeah.
Yeah. At least they're not all the same. Sometimes when we were reading the others, like when we were reading the Defiant and the mainline Star Trek one a few months ago, there were times where it felt like we were getting the same type stuff over and over with each arc. And it was like, all right, can we change it up a bit?
Yes, agreed. Well, so the next one we got was actually another kind of standalone 5-issue arc. That's Strange New Worlds, The Seeds of Salvation. And I would say that this one was truly Strange New Worlds. It was interesting because the whole premise of the story is Chapel's bored, and so Pike just decides to divert the whole ship to visit Chapel's friend on this remote planet. And I would say that, like, especially for the Strange New Worlds crew, this is actually a pretty decent story, pretty interesting aliens, really good, like I put in quotes, villain. That's really more just somebody who's angry about some injustice that's been done. It's a fun sidekick in here with this like android kind of character, kind of almost a Star Wars droid kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then really just, I think, a satisfying conclusion in this one too. I think just as a standalone arc, I thought this one did pretty good. It's kind of what you want from these comics. I think.
And I actually liked the artwork here quite well. I know you put that in the notes for you, but I also really liked the artwork here.
Yeah, it was different, but except for Scotty, everybody looked like they were supposed to look like. And it was still a unique, it wasn't your typical comic book art style, but it worked. Yeah.
I guess we can move on to what I think was the one I was most anticipating and the one that I was also most entertained by. And that was the Voyager one, the Homecoming one, which I was actually kind of disappointed it was over. That's the one that I was like, hang on, wait, that's it? That's all you're going to give us? So this one, I think you had mentioned beforehand, but I had totally forgotten who the villains of this arc were. Oh. So as I'm reading this, I'm reading it, and then I go, oh, holy crap, it's Species 8472! And first of all, we have to acknowledge this is called Homecoming, and it's set immediately after Endgame. And I, you know, since we have the novels Homecoming, I was like, I'm obviously not going to like it that much because I already have a Homecoming story I like. And then as I started the book or the comic, I was like, you know what? They actually got most of the voice. There's some jokes between Janeway and Chakotay that I liked. They kind of a fun nature between them. Some of the stuff with Tom and B'Elanna, I was like it. So I was like, okay, we're getting the characters right. And then stuff starts to go wrong, and suspiciously every member of the crew of the Admiralty, it kind of comes on is Species 8472, except Admiral Paris, and I was like, something's fishy with that, and so as soon as he turned out to be Species 8472, I was like, okay, I feel vindicated, and we go to Fluidic Space, and I don't know about you, but I was worried. When I was reading this, that they were going to end up back in the Delta Quadrant again. Oh. Like, they were going to come out and be where they came out in...
like in Caretaker?
Not in Caretaker, but the episodes where they meet the Species 8472 with the Borg.
Like Scorpion, I think it was that.
Scorpion, that's it. Yeah, Scorpion. So I was worried that it was going to just be them, like, it was going to be this version of a reset, that they're going to have to go back there again. And I was like... Oh man,
that would have been disappointing for sure.
That would have been disappointing. But well, the other part of the other disappointment here is that I felt that the story in the final issue wrapped up way too quick.
Yeah.
Way too quick. In fact, I didn't even understand the wrap up itself because on one page, as we're going, by the way, we're skipping over stuff, but they try to meet with Species 8472. Species 8472 resents them for all their Borg working with them and stuff.
Racism
and stuff. Towards Species 8472, and it's like, well, you're not exactly giving us a reason to trust you guys. But they end up trying to work with them and eventually, you know, kind of hold for time while Seven and the Doctor kind of save the day. Although, man, when the Species 8472 was holding Seven in a chokehold and was like, why don't I just kill her? You know, she's former Borg. And Janeway's like, no, she's one of our, she's good and she's not Borg anymore. And he was like, I'm going to kill her anyway. She's like, well, you're going to get in trouble. Yeah. And he's like, I don't care. I'll get it. I'd rather get in trouble and kill this Borg than not. And I thought that was interesting. But then, like, the climax happens on one page of the comic, and then literally in the next page, they're home.
Yeah.
I was like, how'd they get home though? And I went back and reread it a couple times, and apparently in the span of just a couple of frames, they leave the Species 8472 ship and blow it up or something.
Yeah.
And then they exit Fluidic Space and enter back into Earth's orbit where they're supposed to be anyway.
Yeah. I think it was like Booth B and Archer.
Booth B and Archer joined them.
And I think they were the ones that, because it was, they found, there was, what was it? They went somewhere, or it was Booth B's ship that it wasn't connected to the bio whatever of Species 8472, so their ability to get home wasn't erased when Janeway destroyed it, a la Caretaker, or I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, but so the climax just ends super quick, and then you kind of get like a denouement, and you get all the characters going home, and you see some things that we expected to see, such as Admiral Paris getting to meet Tom and B'Elanna in real life now, like not Species 8472 version, and then we got to see Chakotay with his brother. That was interesting.
Oh yeah.
We also got Chakotay and Seven. Nobody thought they should be together because they break up immediately in the Homecoming novel, and they break up immediately.
Everybody knew that wasn't supposed to work.
Exactly, everybody knew. Which actually, that side tangent, I actually would have been. So there were two things. I would have really liked to have seen Seven with the Doctor. I think that would have been really interesting. And they kind of flirted with that idea in the writer's room for a few episodes. But then the one I really wanted her to end up with was Kim, Ensign Kim. And I was like, oh man, come on guys. It's right there. It's right there. If you're not going to promote him, at least, and they didn't do that. But in this, much like the Voyage, or much like the Homecoming novel, he ends up with Libby.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see him with his parents, although his parents make the joke.
Yeah.
Oh, 7 years still an ensign. I want to talk to your captain.
Yeah. that was pretty good. And, you know, of course they want to, we're going to talk to the captain for you. No, please don't.
Yeah. And then it ends with them taking a group picture.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cute.
Yeah. Well, I think that this almost would have been a fun, ongoing series, even if it was, a limited ongoing series. But, five issues just wasn't, like you said, some of these things had to go so fast. And I thought that this was I like the Homecoming novels just as a good kind of post-endgame, continuation of the show. And this kind of slots right in there in some ways, because it takes place immediately after it's one frame after the credits start rolling is when this takes place, basically. And you could almost, and it gave a nice kind of conclusion or closure to this Species 8472 stuff. And we just don't get enough Voyager stuff, and the artwork was good. There was just a lot.
I did like the artwork here.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I kind of hope they
I could have used more. I would have liked more with this. Although, please do not name the next series the Spirit Walk comics or something. That'd just be too much.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Up until the epilogue section, you're right. You could slot it right in, and even the epilogue itself kind of, in some ways, lines up with the novel. So they did it. I think I would bet that was a discussion that they had, which was they're not in the same universe, but let's not worry about let's not worry about continuity and stuff. Let's just make it so that they both work.
Yeah.
I appreciated that. And that is, I mostly appreciate that they actually addressed Species 8472 because I haven't read all the Voyager books that have happened during the run of the show, but I know the ones after the run of the show, don't barely even mention them, let alone have them show up as a big threat. And it's really, this is an undealt with threat. You never, we had Destiny for the Borg.
Yeah.
We had the Destiny trilogy, which was huge. Species 8472 to me is a bigger threat.
Yeah.
That was just, we just didn't get the time with the threat like we did with the Borg. And it's that would have been an amazing, moving over to the novel space for a minute, that would have been how we had The Fall, which was a five book epic series. I would have loved if they had The Fall, but for bringing in Destiny elements and make it about Species 8472, bring in Voyager, bring in DS9, and they are all having to deal with a Species 8472 threat. That would have been a big seller, I think and it would have. That was one thing in the lit verse that I felt that they just dropped the ball on.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because we got some closure kind of on the show, when they made the alliance with Booth B and them, but they did not represent, and clearly from this comic, that's the way the authors
all
of the comic
them.
That wasn't all of them. And I don't know if it was one of those things that it's like Captain Marvel. It's just, they're too powerful. We don't know what to do with them or something. I think in the Star Trek Online game, they used them there. And I never read the book that was based on that game, but I think they gave the species the name, and listeners can correct me, but I think it's Undyne or Undine or something like that. Which I thought that the comic was actually going to give us a name, because they're like, you don't even call us by our name. You've never even asked us our name. And I was like, oh, is it going to tell us what they call themselves? Nope. We don't get that. It's, that would have been, it would have just been nice to get some more there. And yeah, I agree. And if we'd had some novels with them, even to do something with Destiny or do something where it seals them off in fluidic space forever, so they can't get back into our world, that would have been cool. Kind of the Coda treatment, but for the
right, exactly,
for Species 8472.
All that to say, I appreciate that this comic actually addressed you know, the Species A472 did something, a kind of comic did something that the novels should have done.
Yes.
And, you know, we've praised the artwork on the Strange New Worlds one and the Voyager one, and even a bit on the Lower Decks one. Yeah. So now it's my time to say I did not like the artwork on The Last Starship, because it was already a unique, like, unless you're super into the Discovery storyline, mm-hmm. it was already going to be somewhat confusing. But I felt that the way that they did the artwork made it, like, super hard to tell what was even happening. The whole engineer at the beginning that was, like, orange and, like, I don't even know what that was. I don't even know. Now, thankfully, that character blew up, so I don't have to worry about him. But I just...
That was a Tholian, actually, I think.
That was a Tholian?
I'm pretty sure that was a Tholian, yeah.
Well, it didn't look like an Tholian.
Well, so it was, like, the whole first issue, everybody's face was in shadow. And I thought, mm-hmm. well, this is interesting, because you can tell who is a Klingon. You can tell who's... Mm-hmm. Ferengi, I don't know, whatever the species were that they were showing in there, but, like, it was an interesting choice, because, like, for the artwork, just because, like, I don't know, like, these are all brand new characters, so it'd be good to kind of know what they look like, mm-hmm. but we don't. Like, I don't think it was till issue 2 or 3 that I even realized that the main guy, who's like a hybrid Andorian Vulcan human Trill Bajoran something, that even had a mustache, because his face was always so shadowed.
I never even noticed.
Yeah. See, like, it's they made choices, and I mean,
but there were two interesting choices in this comic. Mm-hmm. You had one was. You brought back Jurati, the Borg, which I saw her and I was like, that looks, they called her Agnes, and I couldn't remember the character's name from Picard. Yeah. So I was like, that looks like the Jurati Borg. and then later on, they actually used the word. I was like, hey, that is the Jurati Borg. Yeah. Making her, like, bringing her on to be the engineer who's, like, holding the ship together. That was an interesting choice. I'm surprised she's still alive 800 years later, apparently.
I mean, she's a Borg, so I guess she can, even her organic parts can regenerate or something.
I guess.
And I mean, it was kind of like taking a page out of, like, that Star Trek and the Defiant ones, where they're mm-hmm. just, like, pulling together all sorts of people. And it was an interesting choice for sure to bring her back. I'm a little tired of... We've had so much Borg stuff, and I love the Borg, but now we're in Discovery, future Discovery era, and everybody knows who the Borg is or who the Borg is. Mm-hmm. And so for her to come in, and it was just like, oh, really? You couldn't have saved her for, like, a Picard comic later on or something?
Yeah, and it was... Her inclusion was weird. But then the real crux of the story is about how they create a clone that has the memories of James T. Kirk. Mm-hmm. And I was like, of all the characters you're going to clone. Like, it just seemed kind of low-hanging fruit to me. Maybe they thought that would help with sales or something. And maybe they're like, well, like, they had a logical reason for why they did it. It just, to me, felt like you're just cloning the most famous character.
Right.
But they clone him. And I will say, the scene where the clone steps out naked and he's just, like, bent down and he's got, like, a fist up. And I was like, all right, that's pretty. It's the image that you see on, like, Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, I was thinking the Terminator. Novel.
Terminator. Okay, you know what? That works. You know, that works too. But I was like, that was a cool image in there. And like, it's like, as soon as he, like, takes command, he just, like, owns it. He just knows how to handle stuff. And I thought that was cool. That's very in line with him. He's, mm-hmm. he does a good job taking command. There's one scene in here that I took issue with. And that was where he's talking with the captain of the ship, the Omega. And he's basically, they're talking about lives on their consciences.
Yeah.
And the captain of the, he says, well, I've, you know, I lost 100 72 crew members, and the captain of the Magos says, well, I have zero lives on my conscience. And I was like, hang on, didn't you like everyone blow up on it, like at the beginning of the book? Right. Like, how do you not have everyone's lives? Well, or is that a future?
No, it was like, I think he was trying to say, like, those weren't his fault. That was just the burn happening, and he didn't decide who lived or died. So, and I was like, that's kind of like, a cop-out. But, like,
that's a cop-out because not all of Kirk's are his fault. Right. So I took issue with that that scene, and I was like, the way you're framing this, I think, is a false equivalency.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, that the captain, or, I mean, a lot of the crew, but really the captain who kind of seems to have a chip on his shoulder about whatever, even though he does kind of like let Kirk take command pretty quickly once he realizes, mm-hmm. like, we don't know war. We've never been in war because, like, by the way, like, when the comic opens, like, just before the burn, we're admitting, was it the Klingons? It was basically the last.
It was a Klingon, like, subset group, the something mind.
Oh, it wasn't the black
Was it the black mind?
It was something.
It was something mind.
You know, which also is, I think, it was the in those Star Trek comics and the Defiant ones that we read. There was the red something, and this I think is like the black something that came. The black hand.
Black hand. Yeah. That's what it is.
And which I think might have been a callback to like the red hand or something like that from the Star Trek, like the Kalos stuff or whatever it was. Anyway, mm-hmm. I think I did kind of like that setup, though, where we're in this far future. The Federation has pretty much gotten everybody to cooperate, everybody to join. We're one big happy galaxy. And then the burn happens and everybody kind of starts going back to their old ways. And so, you know, even though this captain is kind of like, I don't know, frustrated or even with just Kirk being there, but just with the situation, you know, they've never dealt with war or battle or, you know, losing people in those battles. You know, the burn is really the only place they've had people die. And so, mm-hmm. I don't know, I think having someone like Kirk was, you know, again, it's an interesting choice. I think they're doing it to like say, hey, like, we're going to have some new comics. They're going to be new, but they're going to have old, like, original series type Kirk in it. Even though he's got all the memories, he's like a young Kirk, but he has got all the memories of old
they,
Kirk.
They want old Kirk's knowledge and experience in young Kirk's
body. Exactly. Like, that's not what we all would want. but like, it was an interesting idea because they teased in Star Trek Picard that at the Daystrom Institute, like, it's a blink and you'll miss it thing. You could see that they've got Kirk's remains at the.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And so that's kind of where they, you know, where they get his DNA and everything from, or where Borg Jurati does. But because I guess before I started reading this, I was like, how are they going to bring Kirk back? Because I knew it took place in kind of Discovery era future. Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe a hologram, kind of like we get with a hologram Janeway in Prodigy or hologram Jake Sisko in Starfleet Academy, you know, things like that. But no, they actually just created a clone and that's what we get. So, I mean, it was, I don't know. It's an interesting time to explore, especially if you've watched Discovery. You kind of want to know what happened between the burn and when the Discovery showed up. Like, this is kind of taking place during that time. So, I don't know, kind of interesting. I don't know. Just, I don't have a better word for it. I didn't like it or dislike it really, but it's an interesting series. And I'll say, like, we got through like the first five issues or so, and I will say an interesting turn towards the end is the Emerald Chain is being forged. So again, another element of Discovery season 3 is going to show up here. And I guess that was confusing too, because like some of the characters in here, I think we were supposed to know or remember from earlier in these comics. And I was like, I don't know who that is. I think we saw her, like the green Orion lady. I was like, she seems important, but I don't even know. Artwork. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was our comics catch up.
Yeah, we that's a lot of comics, but we'll table those for a while, and I guess if any listeners out there want to chime in on what you think about the comics, just let us know, because we tend to struggle.
Yeah, it's just not our medium.
Not our medium. Yep. Yeah, we definitely into the books, but can appreciate that people like the comics, but we're trying our best here.
Well, speaking of being into the books, our next episode, we are going to be starting a new series. We are going to be starting the Star Trek Invasion crossover series. It was a 4-book series. We will be reading just the first book, titled First Strike, by Diane Carey. It is a TOS novel. The first one's TOS, the second one is Next Gen, the third one is DS9, and the fourth one is Voyager. Mm-hmm. And so we'll be reading the first one in our next episode, and then we'll see what we won't read all four in order first. Right. We'll read like probably one or two, and then we have some new releases, and then we'll probably do 3 and 4 after that. Yeah. But that's our estimated plan.
Yeah, it's exciting. These books came out in 1996. So these, and it was the first invasion, or I mean, it was the first crossover. I mean, we had like Federation, like that novel, which wasn't a super crossover.
Right.
But this was the first true crossover, like multi-book series that Pocket Books ever did. And actually, John, somebody mentioned these books on one of the Facebook Star Trek book groups, mentioned these books. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I remember when those came out, I loved reading them. And John Ordover and I said we were planning on talking about them soon. And John Ordover commented and said, hey, reach out when you do. So we will, once we get through these, it would be, very cool to get him on the show to talk about that and all the other things Star Trek related in his time at Pocket Books. Because, he and Diane Carey, who wrote the first book, he and Diane came up with the invasion concept. So it'd be really interesting to go in his Wayback Machine and find out how they did this, and obviously what it led to down the road.
Well, you remember this. I do not, because this was a full 3 years before I invaded Earth.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, with my... So I just made you feel old. All right. So...
That's okay. It's new to you.
But I'm excited. Yes. Exactly. So I have all 4 books. So
yes.
I'll just be able to get into them.
Yeah.
So I guess we could tell people where to find us. You can find me on my YouTube channel, which is my primary place for talking about books. I talk about all things books, Star Wars, Star Trek, fantasy, science fiction, all that stuff. And you can find my Twitter account at Jonathan Cohn, where I talk about movies, books, all sorts of stuff. And my Goodreads, also at Jonathan Cohn.
And you just recently had a video of your top Star Trek novels series
in the post-Nemesis
era. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Talked a little homecoming.
A lot of people asked for that. Yeah.
Talked a little homecoming in that one too.
We did. Yeah. Synergy time. Yes. Yeah. That was not intended. That was not intended.
It gave me some good, because I haven't read all the books on there, but like The Fall and Homecoming and some. I won't spoil every book on your list, but yeah, it was a good list. It's a good list.
As shocking, absolutely no one who knows me, John Jackson Miller is on the list multiple times.
What? well, you can also find me on YouTube at Bookbuster Reviews. I've only got 7 videos, and I've just been too busy in the last few months with work. But I'm up to like 97 subscribers last time I checked. It just keeps growing. I'm like, this is awesome. So now that there's almost 100 subscribers, I need to start getting more videos.
Think how many you'll get once you post more videos,
exactly,
man.
Right. So yes, you can find me there at Bookbuster Reviews. You can find me on Facebook in the Babel Conference. You can find me on Goodreads. And I don't know if I'm forgetting anywhere else. Those are the places I'm most active, if you can call what I'm on YouTube as active right now. But so that's about it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And until next time, live long
and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.